Rivers have played a big part in the history of our state, and today we're going to take a look at the Chippewa River and some of the history surrounding it. Larry Mueller here, and great to have with me on the phone Richard Cornell to talk about his book. It's called The Chippewa, Biography of a Wisconsin Waterway, and he followed the river from its sources around Ashland to where it meets the Mississippi. And we'll talk about his experiences, a little about the history of the river, and probably talk about paddling in general a little bit, too. What do you think is special about the Chippewa? Have you followed a river from its source ever? Join the conversation. You can call us at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. We'd certainly love to hear from you. And Richard Cornell, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Larry.
I was looking forward to reading your book and enjoyed it very much, partly because I've spent a lot of time in that area of the state muskie fishing. And I've even stayed at some of the resorts, at Treeland, for example, one of the resorts that you talk about in your book. So I was really delighted to read about it. And so thanks for writing it to begin with. And you say in your introduction that you've always liked rivers. What is it? Where do you think that came from?
Well, actually, I know it was. When I was 8 years old, I lived on a 40-acre farm about 20 miles southeast of Madison, and there was a little creek that ran through there, and I used to love to go and lay next to that creek and watch the tadpoles in the spring. And one day I followed it upstream to its source, which was between two huge oak trees, and I stuck my face in the water and tasted a source for the first time. And from that point on, I'd always been just fascinated by moving water. So I've been to the source of the Mississippi, the Loire, and the Thames. And when I lived in Eau Claire, I got the hunger to wonder where the Chippewa came from.
Yeah, and of course, the Chippewa River is right there.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Well, for those who haven't been to the river, describe the Chippewa for us.
Well, it really, if you could imagine, it begins like a Y. Mm-hmm. And the left branch of the Y is the West Fork. And it's about it's the East Fork. It's about 68 miles long. And the other, and it comes from series of streams. You could more accurately call it headwaters than a pure source, although I was able to see the source of the East Fork. And the West Fork flows out of a lake, Lake Chippewa, near Clam Lake. The East Fork is near Glidden, and the West Fork near Clam Lake, and they flowed together. Since the ice, it was an ice age river. It was a river it was an ice melt glacial river. And they flowed together down near the town of Winter. And that's where the combined river started. And in 1923, the power company built the dam there. And it created the Chippewa flowage where you were fishing for those muskies.
Yeah.
And so that's in a way where the river begins, right below that. That's where the combined river begins, right below that dam, and it flows over 180 miles to the Mississippi. And it, during the glacial outwash, it flowed down and into the Mississippi and created Lake Pepin.
That's a good description. You did a nice job on that. Richard, I was thinking, my mind started to wander because once around winter, I caught 90 inches of muskie in two casts.
Wow.
Two fish.
Wow.
46 and a 44 on consecutive casts.
Wow.
Around winter there. So that was really quite an exciting day for me. With my dad, was in the boat with me, so that even made it more fun.
Oh wow!
This journey took you a while, and I really liked your approach here of digging into the kind of the history of the land and the little towns and so forth surrounding the river.
Thank you.
And I'm trying to remember how long you worked on this.
Well, it was pretty outrageous. It sort of evolved. My daughter Kristen and I slid our 18-foot red canoe into what we thought was the source of the East Fork, Father's Day of 1990. And on my birthday of 2003, we pulled up to a sandy beach near the Highway 35, just short of the Mississippi. And she was 5 months pregnant, and her husband had ordered me not to go under any bridges. You know what that meant. Don't go into the Mississippi.
Oh, my gosh. Well, you know, you mentioned Glidden, and I've spent a lot of time around Glidden. And Glidden, I think, is sort of representative of the kinds of towns that you find, the small towns that you find along the river.
Oh, yes. Yes. Yep.
It's what does it bring to mind for you?
Well, it's beautiful. Those little towns, I had so much fun. I should just go back. You asked me about the book, and then after I finished canoeing it, I felt there was something missing. And that missing thing was I didn't know the history or the stories of anything we paddled through.
Yeah.
So I decided to go back, and I initially started making some documentary films, which I posted on YouTube. And then that evolved ultimately into sending a proposal to the Wisconsin Historical Society Press, and they decided to publish this book. But if I could read you, I have an excerpt here from Marilyn Robinson's book, Gilead, and she describes what I think is representative of Glidden and all the small towns along the river. And here it is. And I knew what hope it was. It was just that kind of place, was meant to encourage that a harmless life could be lived here unmolested, to play catch of an evening, to smell the river, to hear the train pass. These little towns were once the bold ramparts meant to shelter just such peace.
That's lovely words.
Yes.
Yeah, lovely words. Chippewa, I'm going to go back and ask you about the word Chippewa and where it originated. You write about that a bit in your book.
Right. I think, Chippewa is, of course, a derivation of Ojibwe.
Yeah.
It could have been called the Ojibwe River or the Anishinaabe River. But the naming, I think, is given credit to an explorer named Jonathan Carver, who paddled up the river 8 years before the American Revolutionary War. He had received a grant from King George III to explore Wisconsin because there was a fear of the English that the French were getting their hooks into this part of the world. So he wrote three books, Travels on the Chippewa River, and I think his books really gave it its name. There were several names, Dakota and Ojibwa names that have been given to the river at various points of the river. For example, Father Hennepin called the river, like, he gave it the name Buffalo, because when he entered the river at the Mississippi, he looked around and he said that there were buffalo all over the place. They were grazing under the trees like cows. So it was. I think I would give Carver credit for naming the river.
You mentioned Ojibwa, the Ojibwa people, and some of what you write about, a little bit about what you write about, involves the treatment and not good treatment at all of the Chippewa, of the Ojibwe people.
Right.
That's kind of part of the story, and I remember being so enthusiastic about the Chippewa flowage, for example, and fishing it and catching a lot of muskie and other fish too, but without knowing the history. And I learned that history some years ago, but it was nice to be reminded about it in your book and the place that part of history that plays in the river itself.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it is a sad history. Treaties were broken. The Water Power Act, the Ojibwe were living there along the West Fork of the Chippewa. They called it Paywa Hung. I think I've got that close.
Mm-hmm.
And it was called Where the River is Wide. And the West Fork of the Chippewa was wide at that point. And so they passed the Water Power Act of 1920, which negated a number of treaties and enabled them to build that dam and create that 13 or so thousand acre lake. And there was a deal made that there was a village there that consisted of a Ojibwa people and some French families, French traders, loggers. So the deal was made that Graves would be relocated in a new town. There was a town there called Post, and it was called that because there was a trading post there. And so they were going to build a new town, and there is a town now today called New Post.
Yeah.
But they didn't, they kept, the power company kept doing something interesting. They called it amendments.
Yeah.
They just unilaterally would amend the deal. So today, you can, you know, you could, there are islands on that that you were fishing around that that have grave sites on them.
Yeah. And we're going to continue this discussion with Richard Cornell. We'll talk a little more about perhaps the history of the Ojibwe, but then we'll take a look at other aspects of the life of the Chippewa and surrounding the Chippewa River. So you stay with us. We'll be back right after this look at the news. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, taking a look at the Chippewa River today with our guest, Richard Cornell. We're talking to him about his book, The Chippewa, Biography of a Wisconsin Waterway, published by the Wisconsin Historical Society Press. And he followed the river from its sources around Ashland to where it meets the Mississippi and put his experiences together in this book. He added a lot of history about the river and the land around it. You may have some questions about the Chippewa. Maybe you've got an experience to share. We'd love to hear from you. Maybe you've got a paddling experience you like on the Chip. I hope you'll join in at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org, or you can post on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. We'd certainly love to hear from you. Richard, we were talking a little bit about some of the issues surrounding the Ojibwa. Moving a little bit away from that, let's talk about the forest and the timber industry that has thrived for a long time along the Chippewa River. And I think at one point you talk about you certainly talk about lumbering along the river and the health of the forest and how the health of the forest affects the health of the water.
Larry, before I do, could I just make one quick comment about that dam that went?
Yeah, absolutely.
In the early 1970s, that dam had a 50-year license. All of these dams along the Chippewa are licensed by the federal government for 50 years. And the American Indian Movement took that opportunity to, quote, recapture the dam.
Yes.
And they, in fact, did occupy the dam. And as a result of that negotiations, there was an agreement that the water, the flowage is now jointly managed by the DNR, Xcel Energy, the tribe, and U.S. Forest Service. So they manage that water together. So I think you could say it's turned out fairly well, and that is now a cooperative, effort to manage that beautiful area.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because that's a little more of a positive, well, probably a lot more of a positive story than what we were talking about earlier, for sure. But what about the forests and lumbering along the river?
Well, the at one time in history, one third of all the white and red pine east of the Mississippi was on the Chippewa or its tributaries. So it was.
Wow.
So it was, a tremendous. And then not only was the river there, there was these creeks and small rivers, tributaries leading into the Chippewa.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like a system just made for logging. So they would, cut the trees in the winter and stack them up, and they would dam up some of these small streams, and in the spring they would blow those dams up, and the water would roar down to the Chippewa eventually, and then downriver to Eau Claire, where the first really large lumber mill was built. As a matter of fact, at one time, the largest mill under one roof was in Chippewa Falls. And then later, Eau Claire, because they had a half moon, they had a lake there called Half Moon Lake, which is still there today. And at that time, it was a perfect place for storing logs. And Eau Claire actually built a dam called Dell's Dam over the objection of Chippewa Falls. They were afraid, the figures at Chippewa were afraid that Eau Claire would stop the lumber that they were sawing from their huge mill down to, would stop it at Eau Claire.
Yeah.
So there was a legislature named Thaddeus. I'm forgetting his name. He was, his son was that famous poet. I might be able to remember when I come back. But he was a speaker. He was with the Wisconsin Assembly, and he managed to successfully stop Eau Claire from building this Dell's Dam. But when they did build the dam, finally, then they had a huge storage area, which is Dell's Pond today, and they, as a result of that, they then, that was the setup for a number of mills, sawmills and other wood products that were built in Eau Claire, and it really made Eau Claire the center at that time of sawing wood in the Chippewa River Valley.
Yeah, interesting. Ralph in Eau Claire has something for us. Ralph, hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. You're talking about the small towns along the Chippewa. My parents grew up in Jim Falls. My mother was just, home was just below the dam, and she loved the river all of her life, and she died at 93, so she got to enjoy it a long time. She gave me a real postcard photo of her uncles hauling rocks to build the Jim Falls Dam.
Oh, man.
The previous caller was talking about the logging. My grandmother bought a badly equipped farm, and they needed a house. And so one time the river was low, so they went out in the river and they gathered up all the logs that had sunk, and they sawed them up and built a house. It was a four-bedroom house. It's still standing today. But we live in Eau Claire, see the river every day. And I always think of my mother, how much she enjoyed the river and the importance that the river played in her life.
Oh, that is a great story. A comment from you, Richard Cornell?
Well, Jim Falls is one of my favorite places. As a matter of fact, I did a book reading in Chippewa Falls two nights ago, and a woman named, Ralph, you might know this name, Erdenmeyer?
Doesn't ring a bell.
Doesn't ring a bell.
Is he on? No. Because Jim Falls was originally Jim's Falls.
Yeah.
And it was named after this Jim Erdenmeyer. And anyway, she was at the reading, so that was quite a thrill to meet her. But Jim Falls is a fascinating place. I had a chance to go to their sturgeon festival that they hold once a year. That, of course, is where the famous Wisconsin War Eagle Old Abe was purchased by an Indian chief, ultimately sold to a Civil War group in Eau Claire. And that all happened in that great town of Jim Falls.
Yeah.
Thank you for your comment.
When you talked about the Sturgeon Festival, my mother grew up right below the dam.
Uh-huh.
And so you know all of the rocks that are down there. And she and her brother would go down after high water, and the sturgeon would be stranded in those rock pockets.
Wow.
And they would catch them and take them out, and I guess they ate them because they were pretty poor, too. But, that was before the days of conservation, and you could do that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
Yeah, absolutely. And in your book, I mean, you write about this in your book, Richard, and you've got a nice photo of the carved eagle in the book.
Uh-huh.
which I liked. And the stories here that Ralph has told, you have many stories concerning a lot of the people who lived along the river. Talk about some of those.
Oh, wow. Well, let me just pick a few. I've actually made a list and hoped you'd ask me. I think the one that comes to mind is Wilson Woody Rawls, who grew up in grew up in Oklahoma, and he moved to Cornell, and he lived on a house which today overlooks the dam in Cornell. And ever since he was a young man, he loved to write. And he wrote all the time. He wrote hundreds of short stories, a number of novels, but he didn't have any confidence in his writing ability. So one day he burned
everything. I couldn't believe it when I read that.
And then when he married Sophie and he told her what he did, she blew her lid and made him sit down and write as much as he could remember. And he ended up writing 35,000 words, which became Where the Red Fern Grows, which
sold millions.
Yeah, which the Disney company bought. He wasn't even interested in marketing. So she edited it, pulled it together, and marketed it. And I was really struck by that. In Chippewa Falls, I came across the story of Father Charles Goldsmith. There are a few people in Chippewa who are trying to nominate him for sainthood. And someone gave me the internet address of his biography. So I read his biography, and I was just so struck. I'm not Catholic myself, but I was so struck by his leadership and his creativity. He created some of the first book groups in Chippewa Falls, many social institutions. And by the time he died, his church that he had created there was second only in size to the one in Milwaukee.
Isn't that amazing?
So I was just quite struck by him. And then there was Thaddeus Pound. That's the name I forgot before. Ezra Pound's grandfather.
Yes.
And he must have been a... I could have gotten hooked on any of these stories. And this Thaddeus Pound was a very successful businessman. I have a feeling he was an extremely powerful politician. And he built the first... that was at the time when... have you heard of the famous Chippewa Water?
Yes.
Chippewa Springs. Well, he built the Chippewa Health Club and turned that into a business. It was one of the things he did. And his son, Ezra Pound, is a renowned poet and writer. And at one point, Ezra Pound wrote a little poem to Chippewa Falls. Could I read it?
Yes, please do.
So this is Ezra Pound. Thus it was that Hiawatha, on the Chippewa's southern slope, where the fountain is still flowing and the city is fast growing, one and wed are Minnehaha, one and wed this beauteous maiden. And of course, Minneapolis likes to claim, you know, they have a little their river here called Minnehaha. So they like to claim, this deal, but Ezra Pound sort of made his own mark on where this actually happened.
That's just great. Tom and Rhinelander has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Larry. I love your show, and I unfortunately didn't get to hear the beginning of this one, but I gather that it has to do with some of the history, at least partly, of the Chippewa Valley. And I happen to be a descendant of the man who donated Old Abe the War Eagle to the Eau Claire Regiment.
Wow.
His name was Dan McCann, and he got the eagle from Chief Sky, and I can't recall Chief Sky's Native American name. There is a McCann Creek in Chippewa County that I believe is named after that family. It's a trout stream. And I think the name that the guest was looking for was Jim Ermatinger.
That's it, right.
Yes, at Jim Falls. A few years ago, I found on a very interesting Native American website called Kanku Ota a fascinating account of some people who canoed from Chippewa Falls or Durand upstream to Brunet's cabin. Jean Brunet still lived there with his daughters at the time. This was, I want to say, the 1870s. And it was very fascinating. The whole history of the Chippewa Valley is fascinating, and I just wanted to thank you for having such an interesting guest.
Thank you, Tom. And you might want to get a copy of his book. It's called The Chippewa, Biography of a Wisconsin Waterway.
Oh, I will get that for sure. My grandfather, Paul Rayleigh, wrote several books about Chippewa history back in the 40s. They're all long out of print now, so I'll look forward to reading a newer one.
All right. Thank you so much for calling, Tom. Another great story, isn't it?
Yes, it is. I actually have that book he is referring to. I managed to acquire that one, that early written book where these it actually was three guys from Eau Claire who went to Jim Falls and bought a canoe from a Ojibwe and paddled upstream. And they described what the Chippewa looked like in those days. And it's rare to find or get a feeling to what it felt like before the trees were chopped down. But that book he's referring to is just wonderful, and I have an extensive quote from that book in my book.
Dean in Cedarburg has something for us. Hi, Dean.
Yeah, I wanted to say a part of the Chippewa River would include Cornell, where there had been a
good-sized paper mill years back, and they maybe had the largest wood stacker, which basically, to me, it looked like just part of a crane that, if you could imagine, a crane that didn't move and didn't pivot, but it was probably originally powered by water to take chunks of wood from the ground level up to and drop them in a big pile. And I remember when I was a child going past that stacker on my way to see my grandparents, and I don't know when that mill was shut down, but it went through a few different owners in the last few years that it was running. St. Regis even owned it for a while, and now the people in Cornell want to preserve that stacker, and there's a park there where they used to stack the wood, and it's called Stacker Park.
Mm-hmm. Very, very interesting. And you talk about the town of Cornell. I often wondered if Ezra Cornell had saved the millions he made and started the Cornell University here in Wisconsin instead of where he took it to Ithaca, New York, what that would have meant. But Cornell, here's an aside. I would go to, on my way fishing north, I would often stop in Cornell, and there was a restaurant, I believe it was called Julie's Restaurant. And they sold their own, they had a dressing for salads. And I would always stop there and buy a bottle of that dressing because it was so darn good. And I don't know if that's still made up there or not, but it was something I always kind of looked forward to.
I actually don't know if it's still there, you know.
I've got to look at it. Somebody from Cornell could probably tell me.
Now, my mother is still alive, and she has a fairly low opinion of Ezra Cornell. She said they just totally exploited that area and took the money in back to New York State.
Yeah, that's exactly what he did, pretty much. Oh, man, wasn't it, Richard?
Yes. Could I make a quick comment? I know about that stacker that you talk about, sir.
Yeah.
And one of my big regrets is that I did not get a photo of it and put it in the book, because it is a remarkable, very interesting thing to see there in Cornell. And Ezra Cornell is, he owned 500,000 acres of Wisconsin farmland, which he bought under the Morrell Land Grant Act, which was passed during Lincoln's administration. And you're absolutely right, sir. He had no intention of investing in Wisconsin. That money was designed to come back and fulfill his dream of building Cornell University, and which he achieved.
Yeah, and believe me, it's a great university. I've spent some time out there. And
yeah, it's a great university.
Often wondered what would happen if he'd gotten in love with Wisconsin and decided to build it here instead. Oh, man.
Well, if I could just comment, I do think the University of Wisconsin itself is a land-grant university.
It is.
So a lot of states benefited from that act.
Absolutely. Well, Dean, thank you again for calling. Appreciate your call. We've got about a minute to go. What was the most kind of interesting thing you learned in your whole experiences in writing your book?
Wow. I think it's the old cliche that the river moves on. I mean, I was just looking back at the number of people who passed away, people who I interviewed, who are no longer with us. And the river still flows by, you know, where they were when I talked to them. And just the feeling that, you know, the river goes on, the river flows into the future, but these stories remain along the river.
Yeah, and I'm really glad that you took that opportunity to write this book. It was a lot of fun for me to read, and I know a lot of people are going to enjoy it. Richard, thank you so much for taking time to be with us today.
Thank you very much, Larry. I so much enjoyed our conversation.
I did as well. Richard Cornell, our guest today. He is the author of Biography of a Wisconsin Waterway, the Chippewa Biography of a Wisconsin Waterway. It's published by Wisconsin Historical Society Press. And it was a lot of fun for me to read because of all my experiences in that area and on that water. So I'm so grateful that he actually wrote the book. Just to take a look ahead, Chad Spate, home improvement expert, will be back with us tomorrow, and we'll be talking about how to get home improvement loans. So I hope you can join us for that. Stay with us. Lots more in store here on the Ideas Network.